Welcome back, everyone. I'm Brad Rieger. I have the privilege for these podcasts to sit across from the great theologian, Father Jim Basic. And Father Basic, we have continuing with our season four focus on high impact theologians.
Oh, well said. I like that.
High impact.
Yeah.
And today,
people like Karl Rahner.
Karl Rahner, yes. But we're talking about a very, very impactful individual today, and that's Rick Gagliardi.
Yes, yes. I need to tell my stories about Rick.
Please do.
He died recently. I just talked to his widow before we came on air, told her that we were doing this. He died at age 65. Many people think he went too soon. He's a great theologian, and he wrote tellingly about his dying. So, I mean, to set the stage where we're going to get to.
And how did you first become aware of Rick, and then how did your relationship evolve?
Yeah. I was giving a talk. It was sometime in the 80s. I don't know, it was 82, 83, in Houston, Texas. It was a talk I was giving to campus ministers, and he was there. He was doing campus ministry work and teaching in some school. And so when I was done, and he had questions and everything, he came up to me and said, "Well, could I drive you to the airport?" And I said, "Yeah, that'd be great. Sounds good." I'm guessing it was a drive of about 45 minutes. I can't be absolutely sure. So we go into the car, he starts talking, I'm in listening mode, and man, this guy is bright. This guy knows a lot of theology. Wow. And I kept getting more and more impressed during this drive. I'm not saying anything, I'm mostly listening. And his ideas about theology, what he knows, what he wants to know, and so on. And at the end of that drive, when we got close to the airport, I says, "I want to tell you something." This was unusual for me. It was out of character for me. I said, "You know, I think you should go to Notre Dame and get a doctorate in theology."
That was your car advice.
Yeah. I mean, my sister Barbara says that was the spirit at work, you know. Sounds good to me. So Rick, you should go to Notre Dame and get a doctorate in theology. I didn't talk to him or see him. It must have been, what I want to say, 15 years or more. So I'm at the University of Toledo as a campus minister, and we had established a chair in Catholic studies. Thanks to my friend Tom Murray in Sandusky, who funded the chair to begin with. He's on my mind because I just preached at his funeral. Mm-hmm. And so the chair opens up. We have to find somebody. I'm on the search committee. So I have some ability to have a say and so on. So I call up Rick Gagliardi. I don't know where he is. I don't know what he's doing. And I find him. And he said, "Yeah, I went to Notre Dame, like you said, and I got my doctorate, and I finished my studies, and I'm teaching here in Houston at the time." I said, "Rick, how about applying for the chair of Catholic Studies at the University of Toledo?" So I said, "Okay." I mean, I think I talked him into it. So he applies, he comes. And everyone applying had to teach a class, and for the search committee could see how they were teaching and so on, a real class. And he blew everybody away. I remember it was a talk on technology. And so, long story shorter, he was hired then. So he became the chair of the Thomas Margaret and Thomas and Margaret Murray and James J. Basic Chair of Catholic Studies at the University of Toledo. And he did a marvelous job. He found a way to act politically. He had lived in a Catholic world all of his life, teaching life and so on. And he spent 10 years at Toledo, and he learned how to be politically wise in a tough situation. He's now at a state university, and he has to be very careful that he doesn't proselytize, that he doesn't violate any church-state regulations and so on. So he taught wonderful classes, and a lot of adult learners came to his classes, which he opened up to them. He was just a terrific teacher, and we stayed in touch then. Eventually, we tried to keep him at Toledo every way we could. We found every creative way to try to keep him in Toledo. We kept him for 10 years. During most of that time, people at Boston College were after him, constantly giving him one better offer than another. Free education for all your kids, you know, at any Jesuit school, a place to live, all kind of bonuses and so on. And we held him off for 10 years. And finally, Boston College won. Ken Himes got him to come there. And he thrived. I mean, he became the chair of the theology department at Boston College. And then he became the president of the Catholic Theological Society, the president. That's the prime body for professional Catholic theologians, Catholic Theological Society of America. He was the president. He was invited to lecture all over the world. When he was in Toledo, I used to call him the premier ecclesiologist in the English-speaking world. Premier ecclesiology is the study of the church, which was his specialty. No, so Elizabeth Johnson's studying God. Rick is interested in the church, and his audience is often the church. And so I would say that he's the premier ecclesiologist. He had four boys, wonderful young men, just terrific. His wife, Diana, they made their home in Toledo. They made a lot of friends, had a lot of contacts. They were good for the community. They branched out. And so his sons used to make fun. Oh, my dad's the premier ecclesiologist. So it became, and in his death notices, and when he died just not that long ago, the people, many of the theologians said, he was the premier ecclesiologist in the English-speaking world. Many of his colleagues characterized him that very way, this premier ecclesiologist.
But he also had a way of being accepted in the academic world, but also in the pews.
Exactly.
Because he talked about spirituality, yeah, as well as...
Yes. One of it, Ron Rollheiser, I hope we get those, what Rollheiser said about him. Do you know what he said?
I do not.
No?
I don't.
You're always so prepared,
I
Brad.
Missed how come this one.
That means I got to remember what he said. But that was the first point. Ron Rollheiser, great Franciscan, spiritual writer and so on, said that he was amazing that this academic, who did first class, premier ecclesiology, knew the tradition, wrote scholarly books and articles and so on, could give popular lectures. Did you ever hear him lecture?
Yes, several times.
Yeah. I mean, you could understand him,
yes.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, he went out of his way to clarify language and so on. In fact, Rollheiser said, is one of those things I'm trying to remember, was that he united those two worlds. And he said how hard that is, because in the academic world, when you're a popular lecturer, people are thinking, is he selling out? You know, there's a sort of suspicion, Rollheiser says, of academics who would give popular lectures, that they haven't been true to their profession, or they've watered things down. He never watered anything down. He knew how to get to the point. You know, he had a feeling for presence. Whatever he did, he understood the moment he was in. Like, what was examples of that? There were donors who gave money to enhance the chair. We got more money from the Lovell Foundation for the chair. And Rick gave a talk, and he knew just how to handle it. He knew what to say. He knew who to thank. He was always present to his situation. So, yeah, that's Rollheiser's first point, was that he combined the academic with, he could speak to the world in the academy and in the pew. That's the way Al Rollheiser said.
Which is difficult. Yeah. Obviously, it's easier to stay in one or the other, right? Or yeah. Specialize in one or the
that's
other.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. And he was unusual in being able to do both, yeah. The other thing that he was good at was uniting denominations. He was on the Catholic Methodist dialogue for years, and being at the University of Toledo was really good for him, prepared him to move into this bigger world, because there's a lot of politics involved in the state university and the religious studies world, and he learned how to navigate all those things, and he became politically very savvy, which helped him as the chair of the department at Boston College. So he was an ecumenical theologian, let's put it that way. So his interest was in how you bring people together. You know, in a sense, it's a model for what we're looking for in our country today, of trying to find ways to take people who are other, different viewpoints, different outlooks, different theologies, and find common ground. He eventually was part of the Common Ground Project, too. And I watched him work in some of those meetings, and how he interacted with people who were very different. I think fundamentally he had a respect for people. I think that he could see the good in others. So when thinking about it, his life work in a sense was to spread Vatican II. You know, that's how many of us felt. You know, how can we get the spirit of Vatican II into our church? How can we be more faithful to the Synod Fathers? That's something that Pope Francis is continuing to do. You know, lest I lose the thought, late in his life. Anyway, I better set the stage. He buried his father a few years ago. And his father, bad relationship with his father. His father was a military man, and he was harsh, judgmental. Rick had trouble getting along with him. His father mellowed late in life, and they played golf together and enjoyed. So they reconciled that. But Rick said that he thought he made a mistake because he never brought up the troublesome things to clear his mind. He said he thinks that was a mistake on his part, that he had the chance to do that. So he's burying his father. Now, at the same time, a third thing happened to him. He was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. That's how he lived the last part of his life, and so on. Never, you know, he had to stop teaching and so on. And it was a horrible, he's written a book. It's called, what's it called?
While I Breathe, I Hope.
While I Breathe, I Hope. Yeah.
The Mystagogy of Dying.
Yeah. Dum Spiro Spero. That's Latin. It happens to be the motto of St. Andrew's golf course, which Rick took great delight in. I don't know how he ever came up with that. You know, while I breathe, I hope. So he started writing these reflections on his dying process, and he goes into it, and it's just he's very graphic about it, and he says he admits how he didn't handle things well, and how he blew up at his wife for no reason. His wife was a saint through this, as were his four boys. They were a terrific, loving family. Rick had written a book on marriage, A Daring Promise. He wrote on many things, A Daring Promise. And he had a wonderful partnership with Diana. She's a solid, good woman. Gave his life over to caring for him. His four boys were just terrific, helping him and so on. So as he's going along for all this time, he's writing these reflections.
And on, it gets, on Caring Bridge.
Yeah, yes, yeah. There's a thing called Caring Bridge when people are sick. If they want to tell a whole bunch of people or all their friends about it, they go on Caring Bridge and they cover it. Yes. Rick used to send me my own copy of a thing. I should say that, oh, you should have asked me about the dedication of the book.
I'm getting to that.
Well, let's do it now.
All right. So at the dedication of the book.
Of this book called, yeah.
While I Breathe, I Hope.
Yeah.
Rick says this to Reverend James J. Basic, esteemed pastor, valued colleague, cherished friend. The 3 minutes were a greater challenge than you could know, but a welcome one.
What's the 3 minutes? So people who are reading the book are asking me, what's this three-minute thing?
Well, I'm asking you because I read the book.
Yeah, good. You asked me, too.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, good. You're the interviewer.
Yes.
You're repeating what many other people said. But what's this 3 minutes? So, explain. We interacted a lot. I read most everything he wrote, and he asked for my criticism of it. In turn, I would turn to him for help. So my standard procedure was this. I would call him up. I'd say, Rick, do 3 minutes on the problem of suffering in the book of Job. Rick, do 3 minutes. So that he wouldn't obviously went beyond 3 minutes. But here was my strategy. I was properly guided. He was so busy, so called upon, so influential, so involved in all these important things, I didn't want to take up his time because I knew how he operated. If I called, if I texted him and said, Rick, I'm doing this thing on suffering. How does Job come into that? He would spend a lot of time looking it up. He would spend a lot of time looking it up. And I didn't want to do that to him. So I didn't want him to have to do that. And he was so, he could do it off the top of his head anyway, and do 3 minutes. But what he said, he'd never, so this was revealing. I didn't know about the dedication. He said, you'll never know how tough that was or how difficult that was, I think, yeah. And I think he's right, I didn't. He reveals something in his book about he had what we know as the imposter complex. He says that in the book. He had an imposter complex. That's a known syndrome where he, in this case, feared that he would be found out, that people would find out he wasn't as great a theologian as everyone thought. Yeah, he suffered from that. So now I understand why he didn't. He was afraid with that I would find out that he didn't know as much as I thought he knew. You'll never know how much that distressful that was for me, but the last line, but I welcomed it. He got me off the hook.
He did.
He got me off the hook. He welcomed it. And so.
When you read this book, what were the themes or the sentiments or the experiences that Rick shared that really touched you?
There's one overwhelming feeling. Well, the first thing is that his honesty, when he would say he'd get mad at God or blow up at his wife or whatever, I mean, all kind of revealing stuff like that. So the first thing is his honesty. But, you know, sometimes he would send it to me ahead of time, and so I could read it. Not, I didn't critique it. I mean, just sent it so I would have it. And sometimes I would respond and say, you know, what struck me is this or that. And sometimes I respond and said, Rick, I'm not saying a word. The best thing to do as I'm reading that is to be silent. Is to be silent before the mystery of human suffering. I mean, he had bad stuff. I mean, he said he was in the bathroom most of his life after that. He lost 50 pounds right away. It was just, he was frail. This vigorous guy. And I would say, nothing. I'll be silent. I had too much respect. It's like I would be touching something sacred that I shouldn't touch. Incidentally, the woman, Grace Agola, who edited that book, she did a great job. And she has an afterword in there. And it's very insightful. And I see her as acting like the priest. She became a friend of the family, a friend of Diana and Rick. And the four boys, and she was involved in praying with him. She's like the priest. One of the things about priest life is we're invited into people's lives. It's a great privilege, you know, to be invited to celebrate your marriage, you know, or to baptize your baby. So this Grace was, in my mind, invited in to the family to be a spiritual help to Rick. And she did a great job of it, for sure.
Yeah,
I don't know what people would get out of. Is there something in there that you would especially remember? I mean, everybody gets something. So people might want to get the book. I mean,
it's you know, filled almost every page.
It's Liturgical Press, right? Yeah. While I breathe, I hope.
While I breathe.
While I breathe, I hope.
Liturgical Press.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this young woman, Grace Agola, is edited and so on.
I think every page there was thoughts that spurred additional reflection on, for me, but it was when he was holding his grandson.
Uh-huh.
And he was in his last weeks of his life or last months, and he just sensed at that moment kind of the circle of life.
Yeah.
He was dying, and then this infant just came in to continue life.
Yeah.
And his perspective on that was really
Now, do you
touching.
Think that is touching, and you're a grandfather.
Yes, so I related, yes.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. You know, how do we tell people what they, so if you're a grandfather, you know, there's stuff in there for you. If there's people, you know, suffering like, why me? Why am I afflicted like this? Rick tries to deal with that. Wants to make sure that God did not send stage 4 pancreatitis as a punishment.
Right.
Don't think of, if you're suffering this, don't think God is punishing you. He had this overarching feeling, no, somehow God is with us. There's always a hope. So I'm thinking, you know, so people who are suffering bad stuff now, and sickness, illness, emotional problems, and so on, it's real, and there's no, and guidance from Rick would say, face it, deal with it, do your best with it. And Christian faith tells us that in the overall picture, somehow that's going to lead to new life. Somehow, and he said that God, he had so often, he felt God's presence through his wife, through his boys, through Grace. And he felt that it was God would not abandon him in the end. when he went to the darkness of death. I wish we could come up with one other takeaway that somebody might get out of this.
I know he also talked about his love of church, but also the brokenness of the church.
Oh, yeah.
And being able to stay in that juxtaposition of the...
Yes, yes, yes. That's another one that Ronald Rollheiser wrote about him, saying that he loved the church and he knew very well its weaknesses, its problems, its mistakes. He knew very well, and yet he loved the church. And the sacraments, he's talking about his dying in terms of the Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Easter. He had a great feel for the liturgy, sacramental sense. It was all real to him. So many of the people say what faith he had, but sometimes he says in the book, my faith was weak. He said, he's like a Mother Teresa thing. He talks about Mother Teresa. Says, this is good. This is a takeaway too. So that that Rick said he never had a mystical experience. He never had it. He could feel Diana's presence, you know, but he never felt God's presence like he felt Diana's. And that's how Mother Teresa said. Mother Teresa said she felt abandoned by God. So that's another takeaway.
That's a great
people
takeaway.
Who don't have great religious experiences and say, it's okay, you know, it's okay. God is with you, even though it isn't that emotionally strong. Brad, I'd like to add some stuff here, okay? You with me?
I'm with you.
Good. I'm thinking about Rick's long illness. He was 18 months dealing with this terrible disease. He was very weakened by it. He lost over 60 pounds. He had neuropathy in his feet, his fingers, and didn't work right. Everything was wrong, you know. And yet he did so much during that time. That's what's amazing to me and to many people. For example, he gave a major lecture at Boston College to his colleagues, and people came from all over the country for it. And in that lecture, he was talking about criticizing his own liberal side of things, which was typical. He never pandered to his audiences. He often thought, well, what does this audience need to hear? So here's all his friends gathered, and he says, well, you know, we have to remember for us liberals that we don't want to just critique without being constructive. We shouldn't critique without any nuance. And the talk went over very well and was well received and put a lot of energy into it. He had amazing energy to do it in the middle of his illness. And then there's another talk he gave. He was invited to Rome to give a talk about the Pope. And he flew with Diana and met his family in Europe. They toured a bit, and he goes to the Vatican and gives this talk. It was a terrific talk. He ran it by me before he did it, which he often did, I must say. And it was a terrific talk about the Pope and his efforts to renew the church. And after that talk, he met the Pope, and the Pope blessed him and had a copy of what the talk he gave. So that's another thing. It's just amazing to me. How could he do that with all these debilitations and so on? Then there was another. He was the president of the Catholic Theological Society for a number of years, and they had a gathering, their annual convention, and they had a program for him. And again, he gave a talk at that. So it was just remarkable what he accomplished. Now, I was thinking... when we would talk on the phone regularly when he was at Boston College, we have long conversations, and we would talk theology, then we'd talk politics, and then Rick would typically say, well, now let's get to the important stuff, sports. So he had a great love. In fact, he was teaching a course on sports. He wrote many good articles on sports when he was forced to stop teaching because of his illness. So on, but he loved, and he knew a lot about sports, and things that I thought I knew quite a bit about, he knew more. And so that was a typical, let's talk about sports. So that leads me up to And one of the things he loved about sports, which is interesting, was team building. He was always talking about teamwork. He loved the Celtics when they played as a team. He didn't like it when Tatum took over by himself. And he loved Texas Ranger Longhorns, University of Texas, Hook'em Horns. And he loved Notre Dame and so on. And it was always about building things up. So he gets down now to the end of his, near the end of his life. And it's November 1st, 2023. And the World Series was being played. And he's with his family. They're watching the World Series. He's a big Texas Ranger fan and was thrilled the way they had built their team. And so on November 1st, he was in the living room watching with his family, and he got very tired, had to go up to bed. And the Rangers won. It was November 1st. They won the World Series that day. And the family came up to tell him, and he sensed what was happening, and he raised his arm. Raised his arm up, pumped his fist. The Rangers had won. He died about a week later. So, anyway, it's important to see that side of him. He functioned without, you know, strong religious sensibilities like God appearing to him and so on. That didn't happen for him. And but he thought that God worked through his family to comfort him. And one of his final convictions was, the God who sustained me all these months through my family, in and through my wonderful wife and children and my colleagues and friends, I believe that he won't abandon me now as I come to my end, death. So, Brad, I wanted that positive ending to laud him for that, a man of faith and a good friend of mine, and I miss him greatly.
Thank you, Father Basic, for sharing a really...
I feel it's a privilege to talk about Rick. He was my good friend, and I miss him dearly. Yes. And I just talked to Diana this morning, and I said, I miss him. I can't imagine what you are going through.
Yes. Thank you, Father Basic.